Good morning. May it please the court, Paul Court for petitioners. I've asked to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal if possible. Petitioners here challenge EPA's rules controlling how areas must meet the National Air Quality Standards for Fine Particulate Matter, or PM2.5. PM2.5 pollution is deadly, so deadly that in 1997, EPA concluded that the standards in place at the time, which covered both fine and coarse pollution problems, the PM10 standards, were not adequate to protect public health from the specific harms caused by PM2.5. As a result, EPA revised the PM standards to target and lower PM2.5 pollution levels.
But now, just to be sure we understand the background, the definition of PM10 did not change, right?
Correct.
Okay. So PM10 really is PM 0 to 10.
It actually is, you know, any particle within that range.
Right.
Right. Okay.
So in literal terms, every non-attainment that was covered by subpart 4 as of 1990 continued to be covered by subpart 4.
Correct.
Okay.
So EPA revised the 1997 standards.
So then what work does the 2.5 new 2.5 standard do? If everything pre-90 is still covered by the PM10 standard, what does the 2.5 standard do?
Well, most areas of the country actually meet the PM10 standards. Many areas now do not meet the PM2.5 standard. So if we're talking about the areas that are subject to subpart 4, that universe is shrinking as those areas meet the old standards, which are not as stringent. They're not geared to protect public health.
So if the government didn't have a separate Assume for a minute the government didn't have a separate 2.5 standard.
Right.
Then more areas that are now in compliance with the PM10 standard might not be for the PM10 standard if there weren't a separate 2.5 standard. Is that right?
I think. Let me see if I can. Tell me if I'm sort of not getting the gist of it.
No.
If EPA had labeled these new standards, that revisions of the PM10, if they had labeled them revised PM10 standards, we would have more areas subject to subpart 4. But because EPA said, no, these standards they're not PM10 standards, they're PM2.5 standards, those areas are not covered by subpart 4. That's the nub of this case, that it turns on the way that EPA labeled these standards. These are revisions to the PM10 standards, yet EPA is saying this is...
You say the revisions to the PM10 standards. They seem to me to be revisions to the PM standards. That is in the sense of addition of a standard.
No. In fact, I think this issue was...
Certainly addition of an indicator. Right.
Again, PM2.5 is PM10, but by definition, under the statute, they could have said this is a PM10 standard. It regulates particles less than 10 microns in diameter.
I
mean, I guess one can imagine all kinds of formulations. But essentially, we have a new indicator, to use the EPA's terms for these things, and a whole set of other things that go with a standard, while the previous indicator marches forward unaltered.
Well, in fact, it is altered in that when they reviewed whether this standard met the statutory criteria and that it protects public health with an adequate margin of safety, they said no, it does not, because it does not address that fraction of PM10, which is fine particulates. So they said, But we're not going to, even though the statute in theory says you have to, you know, revise those standards, we say we're not going to revise the PM, you know, the old PM10 standard. We're just going to shift its function so that it focuses on coarse particulate matter, and we're going to create this other indicator that focuses on the other piece of PM10. So they've broken the PM10 problem in two.
Yes and no, right? I mean, let's say that they have added an extra protection for the fine particles, but presumably the justification that EPA gave this court in American Farm Bureau Federation as to why there was not a mistaken or troublesome duplication, namely that in urban areas the presence of the fine standard would force stronger standards, in effect, require more getting down of the coarse particulate matter.
Right, and so what it said is the function of the old PM10 standard is now to deal with that coarse fraction above fine particulate matter. In American Trucking Associations, well, when this
but the old rule on the inclusion of PM0 to 2.5 was contributing to that, and presumably in any place where you have a violation of PM10 based on exceedances generated by the lower range, the fine range, you're going to have non-attainment.
Yeah, but EPA is on record saying that standard, what they now label the coarse particulate standard, it does not protect public health from the problems caused by fine particulate matter. They can't say that. That's why they had to create this tighter standard to deal with this other fraction. When this issue came up, and it was sort of a side issue in the American Trucking Association, certain states said, this is a new standard. EPA should have gone through a new criteria process under Section 108. And this court said, no, PM2.5 has always been part of PM10. And that's the crux of the argument. The statute says PM10 includes particles from 0 to 10 microns. PM2.5 is within that range. These standards are PM10 standards. They've just been labeled as something else.
Okay, let me try it this way. Take an area that was in non-attainment for PM10
right
before they created the PM2.5 standard, okay? All right, it's in non-attainment.
Right.
Now, the next day, EPA creates the 2.5 standard. Does the creation of that standard in any way affect the attainment status of the PM10 non-attainment area?
No, but it affects what that non-attainment status means, okay?
Wait a minute, before you go on to that,
yeah.
So then if creating the 2.5 standard doesn't affect the non-attainment area of a PM10 area, then I don't understand why the agency created it. I don't understand what work it's doing.
Recall that, you know, what this is a surrogate for PM 2.5 to 10. So what they're saying is these areas have a coarse particle pollution problem. And now they've established a new definition for areas that have a fine particle pollution problem. And those areas are much broader because we've discovered that fine particulate is even more deadly.
But your question, I thought your answer to Judge Williams was that health problem attributable to the fine particles is still captured by the PM10 standard.
No, it's just the opposite, that the PM10 standard expressly says these standards are not adequate to deal with the health problems caused by fine particulate matter. And so we're going to revise those standards and add this tighter standard for that subset of the PM10 problem. Uh-huh. I mean, let me try again.
Let's suppose this. I mean, I get maybe this is not actually distinctive from the current case, but suppose EPA has a standard for carbon generally. But now it has a standard for, I guess, working towards a standard for carbon dioxide, but a standard for carbon. And then it decides that soot represents a form of carbon, represents a especially hazardous substance. And so it creates a standard for soot. Now, let's assume that the carbon was covered by subpart 4. On your theory, the new soot standard has to be brought in, or if not, why not?
If it is a revised carbon standard?
Well, no, just let's... So you're making a turn on whether something is a revision of a pre-existing standard or is a new standard? How can one tell the difference?
Our statutory argument turns on Section 302T, which defines PM10. PM2.5 is PM10 by factual definition and legal definition. A standard regulating particles from 0 to 2.5 microns is a PM10 standard. That's the statutory issue here. And let me, I think what seems to be what we're talking around is sort of EPA's argument that subpart 4 doesn't deal with changes to the PM10 standards. It only applies to the PM10 standard that was on the books at the time.
Can you give me a clear example? Okay, I got your logic here. EPA says that PM2.5 is more dangerous, right? So it creates a separate, tighter standard.
Right.
Now, give me an example of a situation where regulating that new standard under subpart 1 reduces the effectiveness of the statute.
Okay, well, and first keep in mind that there are many areas out there that violate the PM2.5 standard and do not violate the PM10 standard that's on the books right now. Okay? So in those areas, their only controls now are governed by subpart 1.
I see.
So they get 10 years to attain the standards without any consequences. Under subpart 4, they would have an initial try where, you know, they'd be designated moderate, subject to reasonably available control measures. If they needed additional time, they would be subject to the more stringent requirements under subpart 4, which is best available control measures, for example. So I mean, that's what's sort of so absurd about this position. If you had a source before 1990, that was a major source of fine particulate matter. With the 1990 amendments, all of those sources in areas that violated the standards were moved into subpart 4, were subject to these tighter requirements. Now, in 1997, EPA says, oh, this pollution is even more deadly than we thought. And yet EPA is going to move those same sources out of subpart 4 into subpart 1 in areas that violate, you know, those revised standards. So we found that the pollution is yet more deadly, and yet we're going to move these sources into a less stringent control regime. What we laid out in our brief, statute is clear that...
Can I just ask one technical question?
Yeah.
So do the same meters measure PM10 and PM2.5? Is it the same sensors that are used, or are they different?
They are, Well, it's that's not an easy question because there are lots of different ways to measure both of these particles. There are continuous ways, there are filter ways. There are meters that can distinguish and measure both at the same time, but the traditional way of measuring some of these things is on a filter, and you know it's actually fairly low tech, you know.
But if let me just ask you one more question. And so if the agency had not created the 2.5 standard, then what?
Well, the health evidence would have said, and which it did, you need to revise the PM10 standard. It's not adequate to protect public health. And they could have just revised it and tightened it. They could have even done, they could have done the exact same thing they did here, but they, you know, just say it. This is just a revision of the PM10 standard. These are the PM10 standards, but in order to meet the PM10 standards, you have to achieve a lower level of PM2.5 pollution.
I see.
I mean, so the statute makes it clear that these standards, PM10 standards, include PM2.5 standards. The structure of the act is all about moving these same sources, this same pollution, dealing with this exact same pollution problem under a more stringent regime of subpart 4. And EPA here is trying to shove it back into this flexible approach that this court and Supreme Court have recognized over and over again, you know, did not work. And the point we make in our briefs is that over and over, this is not a new problem. EPA, when they adopted the 1987 standards, and Congress, when they amended the Clean Air Act in 1990, recognized that PM10 encompassed these two fractions, the fine and coarse particle pollution, and expressly noted the existence of this thing called PM2.5. went through the specific health effects, control measures, and sources that are uniquely associated with fine particulate pollution, and meant for this subpart 4 to deal with both of those problems. And as I started to say before, what EPA has done here that just sort of makes no sense is that EPA has taken this problem that Congress recognized, that EPA has recognized, broken it in two, and said, we're going to use subpart 4 to deal with the coarse half of this problem, because you know it's areas that meet the coarse, the PM10 standards don't have a problem with coarse particulate matter. They may still have a problem with fine particulate matter, but we're going to deal with that under the less stringent, more flexible subpart 1, and that just can't be reconciled with congressional intent. Thank you.
Can I just go back to my soot hypothetical?
Sure.
I take it, I don't know. Assuming EPA found soot to be especially problematic for whatever reason, and by any means carved out a special, more stringent treatment for it,
right?
Under your argument, it would be brought within subpart 4.
I think,
assuming subpart 4 covers carbon.
Again, in this hypothetical world, if the statute was clear that, you know, EPA was to regulate carbon standards under a particular provision, soot fell within the statutory definition of carbon, the legislative history was clear that Congress understood that soot was part of the carbon problem that they were trying to address. If you had parallel facts, then yes, I would think that the conclusion would be the same.
Well, but understood that it was part of the problem, but also understood that the focus of the regulations as they existed then was in effect on the course, although the fine were covered.
That's an important distinction because this standard was never focused on the course. I mean, even in 1987 and in the legislative history with the 1990 Clean Air Act amendments, they recognized that PM fine was deadly, that fraction was driving a lot of the health problems. And in the 1997...
Wasn't it also the case that just because of the volume, the range between 2.5 and 10 was likely to dominate enforcement and findings of non-attainment, et cetera?
I don't know that that was so much part of the reasoning, but I would commend to you to look at that 1987 rulemaking, and because this comment came up. You know that PM 2.5 is a distinct problem. Why aren't you regulating it separately? Why aren't you setting a separate standard? And EPA at the time, he kind of, you know, pointed to, you know, some lack of information about how to distinguish things and things like that, and decided that that using a 0 to 10 indicator was going to be adequate to deal with the problem. In 1997, they concluded they were wrong, that was not an adequate strategy, and so they revised the PM10 standard to now include these tighter limits on that subset. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Lane?
My name is Brian Link from the Department of Justice Environmental Defense Section. With me at council table are Jeff Wilcox and Stephanie Hogan from EPA's Office of General Counsel. In this case, we believe the following conclusions are supported by the arguments in our briefs. First, the issue of whether EPA may implement the PM 2.5 NAAQS under subpart 1 should have been raised in a challenge to the 1997 rule establishing that NAAQS, based on Whitman's holding that the same issue was ripe for review in the context of ozone at that time. Second, on the merits of that issue, EPA correctly interpreted subpart 1 to apply to PM 2.5 implementation for reasons that are distinct from the merits analysis in Whitman. And third, EPA reasonably explained why it did not presumptively require ammonia and volatile organic compound, or VOC, emissions controls in all PM 2.5 non-attainment areas. I'd like to address the finality issue first, with your permission. It's important to remember that the PM 2.5 preamble in 97 and the ozone preamble were not written in isolation from one another. They were part of a joint rulemaking process. EPA jointly announced to the public in 1996 its proposed decisions to revise the existing particulate matter and ozone NAAQS. It published the proposed rules in tandem. It held joint hearings to consider comments on both proposals. And it published the final rules in tandem. And not surprisingly, given that they were written in tandem, these preambles mirrored each other on the specific question of whether subpart 1 would govern implementation. They both addressed that issue, and they both did so definitively. And in both preambles, the issue came up in the same context, in response to comments asserting that the enactment of subparts 2 and 4 had somehow eliminated EPA's discretion to revise the existing NAAQS. So again, not only did EPA address the same issue, it did so for the same reasons and in the same context in both of those preambles. And both preambles devoted approximately the same amount of discussion to this issue. In the joint appendix, you find it for particulate matter at 645 to 46 and 655.
Now, unless my colleagues have questions about this issue, I'd like to get you to talk about the statute.
Sure.
So as I understand the agency's theory, is that the use of the phrase in the statute of PM10, that refers, I'm talking about the 1990 amendments, that refers to the then existing PM10 standards, right?
That refers to the then existing PM NAAQS indicator, and that is an important distinction.
PM10?
PM10, because the criteria pollutant is particulate matter, always
the
has
pollutant,
been and still is.
PM10.
Well, the pollutant is particulate matter, but the indicator for the pollutant at that time, for purposes of the NAAQS, was PM10. Now there are two indicators, PM10, PM2.5, and at a prior date, of course, the total suspended particles was the indicator. And the reason that's important is because it was Congress was aware when it chose to enshrine that definition of that indicator in the statute that the agency already distinguished between...
What do you do with the statutory definition of PM2 as including everything from 0 up to 10?
I agree that the statutory definition refers to particles smaller than 10 microns, which would include particles smaller than 2.5 right. microns. However, I think that has to be understood in the context that Congress knew that EPA distinguished between the coarse and fine fractions of particulate matter, and that it already had considered and had in fact used alternative indicators and had specifically considered PM 2.5 and might do so again in the future. So,
well, under your theory, could, instead of creating a PM 2.5 standard, could it have created a PM, say, 9.9 standard and regulated that under subpart 1?
In theory, it could have done so. But the question whether such a standard would have been supported.
I'm not asking a question about whether it's arbitrary or capricious. Your theory, your view of the statute, though, is that the agency could have done that.
Well,
right?
It might be a closer case in terms of how the statute should be read.
Why? I mean, under your theory, I don't see why it would be closer. Your theory is that PM10 in the statute meant the then existing PM10 standards, which the agency could change, which it's done by creating a 2.5.
Well, in that hypothetical, the court might have had concern that there was an attempt to evade Congress's attempt at adopting subpart 4. But here,
because I don't know why this would be any different, because what you, according to what Mr. Court said, and I'm curious about your reaction to this, is that a result of this is that a source of you agree? I take it. I mean, EPA has said that 2.5 is the most dangerous element of PM10, right?
There
in terms of public health.
EPA has said that there are greater health risks.
So under his point was that before the creation of the 2.5 separate standard, a source creating emitting 2.5 would have been regulated under subpart 4. But now, as a result of this, the most dangerous emissions are now moved out of subpart 4 into subpart 1.
Well, that would depend, of course, whether a source was regulated to begin with under the prior standard.
But
would depend
right
on whether
that,
the area was a non-attainment.
But he's right about that, right?
It would depend on whether the area was a non-attainment for PM10, because while it's understood that there is some overlap in sources, and obviously whatever emissions there are of PM2.5 may contribute to PM10 non-attainment, the fact is that non-attainment would be determined based on the PM10 levels,
so
not the PM2.5 levels.
Is it the agency's? I understand the argument that the statute incorporates the then existing PM standards, but are you also arguing that there's really nothing to worry about here because the existing PM standard also includes fine particles?
Well, the existing, our argument ultimately is not that there is some sort of risk in reading the statute this way. I mean, in fact, the statute itself says that subpart 1 applies unless another subpart specifically provides requirements. And similarly, 7602J of the statute says that the major source threshold definition under subpart 1, 100 tons, applies unless another subpart expressly applies. And so what we're saying here is that when we read the statute, that indicates that if subpart 4 does not specifically provide requirements for PM2.5 non-attainment areas, then subpart 1 must govern. Had Congress simply used the term particulate matter instead of PM10, there would be no question that subpart 4 would specifically provide requirements for any possible standard EPA conceivably might adopt for any fraction. But instead, Congress chose to use the term PM10 everywhere in subpart 4, even though it had used the term particulate matter elsewhere in the 1990 amendments.
How do you distinguish this from what happened in American Trucking? I mean, the Supreme Court said there too, the agency created a new standard, the 8-hour ozone standard, right?
Yes.
Which obviously overlapped the 1-hour standard. And the Supreme Court made very clear that that new standard also had to be, well, in that part of the statute, it was under subpart 2. Why is this any different from that?
There are several distinctions, and two of the most important are this. First, The text of subpart 2 repeatedly and consistently refers to the criteria pollutant, to ozone.
Yeah, but so does this. Let me give you an example. Let's take a look at a section of the statute here, okay? I'm looking at 7513AE. This is about the precursors,
yes.
Okay? It says, so under this part, for major stationary sources of PM10, right? Now, your view is that means the then existing PM10 standard, right?
Well, and to be clear, then existing or any revised PM10 standard. We're not disagreeing that this applies to, as well, the revised PM10 standard, such as that promulgated in 2006.
Yeah,
but yes, it refers to the PM10
indicator. Keep reading. Shall also apply to major stationary sources of PM10 precursors.
Yes.
Now, it's clearly not using PM10 precursors there. It's using it just like the statute, just like ozone. That's the pollutant, right? That's what that is. That's the pollutant.
No, I would...
PM10 precursors. They're not talking about the then existing PM10 standard. They're talking about the precursors to the pollutant PM10.
But it's still a reference to the specific NACS indicator. I mean, and again, it's not a question of whether it's existing or subsequently
revised.
That
part of it is just like the ozone statute. It's talking about the pollutant.
In fact,
it seems to me that, you know, I mean, it's language like this, it seems to me to suggest that when Congress used PM10 in this and defined it the way it did, that it was talking throughout about the pollutant.
It can't, though, be just merely coincidental that Congress, A, understood that ultimately the criteria pollutant was particulate matter, actually used those words in other parts of the 1990 mm-hmm. amendments, and yet conspicuously avoided ever using the words even once in the text of subpart 4 anywhere, while referring to the indicator about 30 or 40 times. And that is very different in the way that's written than ozone, where, as Whitman found, the entire subpart, too, speaks to ozone, and there are only very limited portions of it that appear to refer more specifically to the one-hour standard. So this is the opposite, essentially, of the statutory construction issue in Whitman.
Can I ask a question that follows up on a hypothetical offered by Mr. Court? Would it have been possible for the EPA on finding what it did about the effects of fine particulate matter to refrain from adding a new indicator, but to add provisions to the PM10 standard? Am I using the term correctly to speak of a PM10 standard?
I believe so.
Okay.
Yes.
Revise the PM10 standard in such a way that the fine particulate matter was singled out for special treatment in a way that was substantively no different from the effects of creating a new indicator, as it in fact did.
It's possible. I mean, obviously, this is a complex area. Certainly, it seems that EPA could have potentially, for example, considered whether to set the level for PM10 at such a low level that it would effectively require a greater focus on the fine fraction.
Well, I'm suggesting something different, something that is to say, setting a, in a sense, bifurcating PM10, but keeping PM10 as at least the, I'm going to say nominal, I'm not sure about that adjective, the nominal indicator.
I believe it certainly might have been possible to specify particular types of programmatic requirements that would be written in subpart 4 in such a way that they unmistakably refer to the fine fraction.
I didn't mean subpart 4. I meant into the standard itself. That is to say that there would be the PM10 standard and there would be independent rules within that standard for the course and the fine, or is it, would that be creating a sort of complete anomaly, a monstrosity?
Well, it's certainly difficult to whether that would be feasible as a practical matter is it's a little bit different. There's no precedent for that amongst the other pollutants.
I'm certainly sorry, I didn't hear that.
So you're asking, could EPA have revised the PM10 standard, not adopted a new indicator, and yet somehow created a subcomponent.
Putting aside subpart 4, substantively the same regulatory effect.
How that would match up with the way the words are used in the statute is probably a question that makes the practicality uncertain.
Is indicator a statutory term?
Indicator, to my knowledge, is not a statutory term. It's a term of art that EPA uses in the NOx setting process, and it's one of the components of a NOx that it evaluates each time it considers revising.
Is that embedded in a regulation?
There is, since 97, or at least post this 97 NOx, a regulatory definition of PM2.5.
No, I meant, is the concept of indicator defined in a regulation?
I don't know if there is a definition indicator, but there's
one obvious difference between
EPA has always had
is that you have a new indicator, right?
Yes.
And so I'm trying to figure out how grounded what the concept of indicator is grounded in.
I understand. I know that at least since EPA adopted the total suspended particles indicator for the NOx, there has always been a regulatory provision defining an indicator. In other words, there was a regulatory provision, and I assume it's still on the books, that defines TSP. It created one later that defined PM10. It now has one that defines PM2.5. I don't know whether there's something that... Right.
It's the anterior question
right.
of what is an indicator.
What I don't know is whether there's a definition of the word indicator per se.
Maybe we can get at my question by talking about the different way in which precursors would be handled. Take, for example, ammonia is a precursor of 2.5, correct? Right.
Correct.
But it's also a precursor of PM10, right? Because PM10 includes 2.5.
Yes.
Right? So, if you have an area that's in non-attainment for 2.5, the treatment of ammonia there will be, in fact, based on the standard that it's at issue in this case, right? I mean, it's discretionary. EPA is not subject to the subpart 4.
Right, EPA has discretion to judge whether it should be regulated and has adopted a presumption against
that
can be rebutted.
So a precursor of a fine particles which are a greater threat to human health than coarse particles is regulated less severely under the EPA's approach. It gets under subpart 1.
I'm not sure.
Does that make any sense?
I'm not sure you could categorically say that because even under subpart 4, although there is a presumption in favor of regulating precursors, it can still be rebutted under the terms of subpart 4 if they do not substantially contribute.
But it completely changes the standard.
But just to finish.
I mean, here the subpart 1 standard is there will be no regulation unless the state or the agency finds that it contributes. Whereas under subpart 4, it switches the burden of proof completely and the state's not involved.
But because PM10 includes the coarse fraction as well as the fine, the extent to which the interaction of precursors in the atmosphere contributes to the problem may differ when you are measuring PM10 non-attainment than when you are measuring PM2.5 non-attainment. So in the end, I'm not sure as a technical matter whether there's a difference.
It seems to me that all of those differences relate to an increase to the damage to public health. Not just that fine particles are more dangerous, but as I understand EPA's analysis, coarse is more dangerous when it's associated in the presence of fine particles, correct?
I believe that.
Yeah. I mean, they work together so closely, and when you have the more dangerous one in the fine, it doesn't. I don't see why it makes sense to separate out the fine particles in a way that not only subjects them to the less rigorous subpart one, but also eliminates the way in which fine and coarse work together to make coarse more dangerous. Do you see my point?
Well, but again,
why did I don't understand why the agency would do
that. If that though had been the concern of Congress, it had two words. All it needed to do, to be absolutely clear, was use two words: particulate matter, and there would have been no question. And it knew again that EPA might adopt a separate indicator for PM2.5.
It used PM10 and defined it PM10 as everything up to PM10.
Which it was
aware.
The only
thing that was excluded was everything above PM10.
Which though it was aware was distinctly understood as a separate quantum from PM2.5, even for purposes of considering whether to adopt standards.
Suppose I don't agree with that view of the statute. Then what? Suppose I don't. What's your fallback position? Suppose I don't think that that's right. Suppose I think that PM10 in the statute was meant to talk about the pollutant, not the then existing standard.
Well, but it would still be a question of whether the statutory language specifically provides requirements for PM2.5
non-attainment.
That's the formulation.
My question is this.
Yes.
As I understand the agencies, normally what the next question would be, you would expect the agency to say, well, okay, if that's what you think, Judge, then the statute's ambiguous, right? And you should defer to our interpretation of it, correct?
Yes.
But EPA's entire position here is that this statute's absolutely clear that, in fact, the agency had no choice but to regulate PM2.5 under subpart 1, correct?
That's correct, and to complete the summary, yes, the statute is clear, and also 7502 and 7602J make clear that if there is ambiguity, you have to assume subpart 1 applies, because they say that it applies unless another subpart specifically provides requirements.
Well, but specifically refers to PM10. I mean, that's part of my statutory analysis. PM10, subpart 4 refers to PM10, which specifically removes it from subpart 1. Now, if I'm right about that, then that's the end of the case, correct? Because you don't have a Chevron 2 argument, since your view is that, the agency's view is that, you had no choice but to regulate PM2.5 under subpart 1.
EPA's rationale was based on the conclusion that the statute compels.
Plain language of the statute. Right.
But, again, that taking into account 7602J and 7502 and what they say about requirements under subpart 1 applying unless otherwise specified, that there's no specification of PM2.5 requirements here.
Why did the agency do this? Why did it carve out a separate standard and treat it under the less rigorous subpart 1A? The answer is the statute requires it. If Congress wanted to change it, Congress changed it. We realize PM2.5 is more dangerous, but the statute leaves us no choice. Correct? There's no policy behind this.
It's not based on separate policy considerations from the way the statute is read and giving it with natural reading.
Right.
And the statute, by the way, was amended to provide separately for PM2.5 designations in 2004. For 7476, which is additional.
We have a different question here. That is, how do you treat it under subpart 4, subpart 1? And the agency's position is that the statute requires it to be treated under subpart 1. Right?
That's correct.
Okay. By the way, let me just ask you, I asked you about my 9.9 hypothetical. Suppose instead of doing that, I know you reacted, you didn't like the extreme nature of that one. Suppose, for example, the agency, instead of doing that, decided to create an urban and a rural PM10 standard. And what? Separate standards.
If it was still a PM10 indicator, then I believe it would be governed under subpart 4.
Even though it's not the one that existed at the time?
We acknowledge that a revised PM10 standard is still provided for under subpart 4 because the classification provisions in 75.
But it wouldn't be the one that existed in 1990. The one that existed in 1990 covered the whole country. This would be two separate ones, one for urban areas and one for rural areas.
But if it was a revision of PM10, it would still be governed by subpart 4.
I'm sorry, what was the 2004 statute you referred to?
It's now found in 7407D6, but that amendment was added to the statute in January of 2004, I believe.
Any further questions, Judge
Tatel? I see that I'm...
Judge Tatel, do you have any questions?
Just one other question. What's your reaction to the NRDC's argument that, I think I know your answer, but let me just ask it. The argument that the NRDC makes is that, when Congress enacted the 1990 amendment, it knew not only that fine and coarse were in fact different and had different sources and different content, and it also knew that PM2.5 was, that fine particles were more dangerous, that it knew all that when it enacted the 1990 amendments and therefore intended all of them to be treated the same way under the more rigorous provisions of subpart 4.
It just seems like an odd linguistic approach to making that intent.
Right.
No.
So your answer is
it doesn't seem to make sense.
In other words, they wouldn't have used the phrase PM2, PM10.
Right.
They wouldn't have referred to the then existing regulation.
Right. Why not say particulate matter?
And so it's not as if... your whole case rises and falls on that issue, doesn't it?
Well, I wouldn't say entirely. I guess I should mention that Whitman is also different, and I think our case rests on this in part, in that Whitman nullified, or at least found that EPA's approach nullified subpart 2. Here it preserves vitality for both subparts 1 and 4.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Under the deferential standard of review that applies, the court should uphold
both of these. What deferential standard of review? You and I just finished a big discussion about your argument is that this is statutory.
Yes.
What deferential standard of review are we talking about?
You're right. It's a Chevron 1 issue. Right. So in that respect, yes.
Okay. I mean, you know, I thought we had agreed on that. Let's make this more complicated.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right.
Does Mr. Cord have any time? All right. Why don't you take a couple minutes?
I was hoping to just address one misstatement there at the end. This case is not distinguishable from Whitman based on the nullification of the ozone standard compared to what EPA is doing here. Whitman, EPA left subpart 2 in place for the one-hour ozone standard. Here, EPA is leaving subpart 4 in place for the prior PM10 standard. That wasn't the issue in Whitman. Whitman was about whether these 1990 amendments should apply to the new standards. And the Supreme Court said, you can't just throw all this away when you revise the standard. And that's exactly what EPA is trying to do here. Throw it all away, not apply it to the new standards. There's no distinction on that basis. I think the central discussion was, you know, is PM10 a pollutant or a standard? And I think there are a couple things that the government said that are telling here. He acknowledged there at the end, and you know, he's on, you know, standing in front. Maybe it's not thought through. But if they had revised it to an urban-rural standard, the subpart 4 would still apply in their mind. That to me says this is about the pollution problem. It is not about the standards per se. Judge Tatel, your questions about the precursor provision I think are also important because the precursors form PM2.5. Those are targeted, that problem, that atmospheric formation that comes from the reaction of these chemicals forms fine particulate matter. Coarse particulate matter is created, is dust. It's created through these mechanical processes. So in that discussion where Congress is talking about regulating precursors, what they're really driving at is the regulation and control of fine particulate matter. EPA says that this case would all be made simple if Congress had just said particulate matter. It doesn't make any difference. PM2.5 is PM10 the same way it is particulate matter. And the reason Congress identified PM10 was not to lock in a particular standard. The Whitman Court kind of rejected that notion. The reason they identified PM10 as the pollutant is because the evidence in front of it was that larger particles were not a health concern. They were not the reason that Congress saw a need for tighter controls. It was to regulate these smaller particles, less than 10 microns, that was the driver for these amendments, the need for tighter standards. And EPA now is saying those particles, the small fraction, are even more dangerous, so now we're going to revert back to the flexible approaches that Congress rejected. That just doesn't make sense.
Can you answer the question I've put to Mr. Lane, whether without changing the indicator, EPA could have, and without some kind of enormous regulatory transformation, could have adopted a, keeping the PM10 indicator, had adopted a rule substantively identical or have supplemented the pre-existing PM10 rule with provisions having exact substantive impact that PM2.5 does.
Well, I think this also goes to your other question about indicator. This is an invented, you know, phrase. They could have said.
This is a what?
It's sort of an invented phrase. You know, there's no statutory root for this concept of indicator. They could have said the way that an area meets the PM10 standard is if it measures fine particulate matter and demonstrates that the levels are below 15 micrograms per cubic meter.
It would seem sort of anomalous, as you phrase it. The way you meet X is to show something relating to a subset of X.
Yeah, but yes, except for PM2.5 is PM10 by definition. I mean, right? I mean, there's statutory language that says it's everything within this ambit. And so if they went through the analysis and they said the problem caused by PM10 is exclusively these fine particles. Congress said, you know, go regulate PM10, review those standards every 5 years, and ratchet them down to address public health. If EPA had gone through and said, we have new science that says this upper fraction doesn't cause any health concerns, but we still need to revise these PM10 standards because they're not protecting public health, and they said, you know, what you need to do is lower this fine fraction, we wouldn't be here, right? I mean, there's the statutory language talks about PM10 and standards. We are dealing with PM10. We are dealing with national air quality standards.
Let me just ask you about my precursor question.
Yeah.
I'm trying to understand how they would be treated differently. Suppose you had, if you have an area that's in non-compliance, say you have an area, one area that's in non-compliance with PM10, I mean non-attainment.
Right.
And another area that's in non-attainment for PM2.5.
Right.
Okay. Now, how will, in the non-attainment area for PM10, ammonia, I want to talk about ammonia because that's a precursor for both, right?
Right. Well, yes, because it is a precursor for PM2.5.
But it would also be
because
regulated in the non-attainment area.
Exactly, because PM2.5 is part of PM10.
Correct. So, but that would mean then that in the area that's in non-attainment for PM10, the precursor,
the presumption is that you would control that.
You would control it, whereas right. In the PM2.5 non-attainment area, it's not.
Right, which is
make
completely
make
backwards
sense.
Because ammonia forms PM2.5. So you're saying in a PM10 area where now the focus is on that coarse fraction, you have to control ammonia to reduce PM2.5 levels, which are part of that PM10 problem. But in a PM2.5 area, you don't.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
place we stayed was awesome.
Really?
Yeah.
No, what exactly. Town was it in?
It was in, I can meet up to you, but it's on the north side.
Actually, I am going to take you up on that, because we had such a good time, and I would like to do this as a regular thing with the kids. It was just, you know, so nice.
There was also